Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a podcast exclusively for members of the Quilt Fiction Story Guild. I'm Frances O'Rourke Dowell, and thank you for joining us, and as always, thank you for being part of the Quilt Fiction community. Now, on to the story. Chapter 7. When Florence comes home from work on Monday, Finn is, as always, in the attic. How can he stand it, she wonders, when the weather is so cold? Well, the fact is, Finn is less affected by weather than any other human she knows, with the possible exception of Leo. Leo will play outside no matter the temperature or the amount of precipitation, and grumbles when forced to stay in on rainy afternoons. "What shall we have for dinner tonight?" she asks the boy as she comes into the kitchen. "Frog toes? Lizard ears?" He holds up a small stuffed bear. "Franklin would like gooseberry pie for dinner, please." Florence walks over and examines Leo's new friend. "Franklin's a fine-looking fellow. Named after the president, I presume."
"He's named after Benjamin Franklin, who discovered electricity and wore a wig," Leo informs her. "But this Franklin doesn't wear a wig because he has fur."
"Well, he's adorable, whoever he's named after," Florence says, before going to the stove to retrieve the kettle. "Is he new?"
"Miss Ashby gave him to me," Leo tells her. "Miss Ashby's my teacher."
"Yes, I know who Miss Ashby is, darling. She's awfully nice to give you Franklin. Did she give little bears to all of the children in your class?"
"Just me," Leo says, at the same moment that Finn enters the kitchen. "She came to dinner at Grandmother Anna's last night, and she gave me Franklin for Christmas. And then she asked me what I thought Santa Claus might bring me, and I had to tell her that there isn't a Santa Claus."
"Or else the bunnies ate him," Finn jokes, but he sounds uncomfortable, as though he'd rather not discuss Leo's teacher.
"Bunnies can't eat a person, Finn," Leo argues.
Florence fills the kettle and puts it on the stove. She wonders if a different young woman comes to dinner at Mrs. Wyman's every Sunday. Is Finn's mother auditioning potential wives for him? Or has Miss Ashby already been auditioned and deemed acceptable? Is a wedding invitation forthcoming? An Easter wedding might be nice, Florence thinks, with all the flowers in bloom. Though, do people get married on Easter? She'll have to ask Bess. Florence suddenly remembers her Christmas gift for Leo, the set of children's encyclopedias hidden upstairs in the small bedroom at the end of the hall. She hasn't gotten around to making the room right for a little boy yet, even though she's made a list of things to fill it with. Books, of course, and a globe to begin with. She'd been considering getting a Gilbert's chemistry set made especially for children, though it might be a little too advanced for Leo. She planned to discuss it with Finn first, but now, looking at the little white bear, she knows she won't. Won't discuss the kit, won't purchase a globe. She'll get Jasper to drive the books over to Finn's house on Saturday. They've reached the end of things, haven't they? Why, it never occurred to Florence that Finn would have a lady friend is beyond her. How did she think he spent his weekends? Building tree houses? It seems so obvious to her now that she feels foolish. Emmeline was right. Florence has been playing family, and she's been playing it all by herself. Well, it's time to put a stop to it. She doesn't need a greenhouse or a bigger bathroom. She doesn't need Finn and Leo to come back in the spring. She needs to get on with her life, a life that she most certainly will be living alone. Florence turns to Leo. "So, what did Miss Ashby do when you told her there wasn't a Santa Claus?" Leo smiles, remembering.
"She pretended to cry
And then she started laughing. And then she said that there is a Santa Claus, and maybe I would believe in him when I grew up.
I think she's right, Florence tells him. She turns and smiles at Finn. Miss Ashby sounds like a wonderful woman. You and Leo are lucky to have her.
Finn doesn't say anything for a moment, and then he ruffles Leo's hair.
She says Leo is one of her best students, although he does tend to ask a lot of questions.
She also wonders if perhaps he should skip first grade. What do you think?
I'm sure Miss Ashby knows better than I what's right for Leo. The kettle announces itself with a loud whistle, and Florence goes to take it off the stove. She should thank Finn, really, she thinks as she pours boiling water into her teacup. He's made her see that she's hungry for a family. How lucky she is, then, that she has a perfectly nice family already. One filled with nieces and nephews to dote upon, two dear sisters-in-law, and two caring older brothers. And Tibby, of course. Old Tibbs has been with Florence through thick and thin. That makes him family in her book. She'll miss Finn and Leo, naturally. They've become good, dear friends. Perhaps she'll have them over for Sunday dinner now and again. Miss Ashby, too. How lovely for Finn to have found someone, Florence thinks as she goes to the cupboard to get out the bread. When her eye falls upon the teacup on the windowsill over the sink, the one filled with dirt and sticks, she shakes her head. Somehow she whimsically thought the sticks might take root. What a fool she is.
I think it's time to put this outside, she tells Leo, picking up the cup and walking to the back door. The sticks might miss their brothers and sisters. The rabbits might eat them, he warns her, holding Franklin close to his chest as though to protect him.
The sticks aren't magic, Florence insists. Rabbits mostly like magic things.
Mostly they like carrots and leaves,
Leo informs her, and Florence smiles. Yes, of course you're right, darling boy, she says, and then she walks out onto the porch and down the steps to the yard, where she lifts the cup up to the sky and then turns it over, watching as the dirt and sticks tumble out into the dark and then disappear. Chapter 8. The Wednesday Bee meets at Florence's house the week before Christmas. Oftentimes, when it's her turn to host, she transforms one of the third-floor classrooms in building number 5, laying pretty tablecloths over two of the long tables and setting out cakes and pies from the cafe's kitchen. But with Christmas so close, she thinks it will be more festive to have the girls at the house. She spent Tuesday night in a frenzy of baking, ginger snaps, crumb cake, apple pie, and this morning she got out of bed an hour early to make pimento cheese spread and egg salad. At 8:30, Daisy comes into the house through the back porch and deposits 2 loaves of sandwich bread on the kitchen table.
The line at Dellinger's was 1/2 mile long this morning, she reports. I think you must get there at sunrise if you don't want to wait.
I'm glad to hear business is so good, Florence tells her as she retrieves the egg salad from the icebox.
That bodes well, don't you think? Perhaps the economy is starting to recover. Now be a dear, won't you? And cut the bread for 12 sandwiches. Make the slices as thin as you can, and then after you make the sandwiches, cut each one into quarters, please.
Daisy harumphs. Daisy is always harumphing before she retrieves the serrated knife from its drawer.
I do not need instructions for making sandwiches.
Florence declines to comment. Daisy is an excellent housekeeper and a top-notch gardener, but she's a famously bad cook. She can make a decent pie crust and a good loaf of banana bread, but otherwise it's best to keep her away from the stove. The two women work in silence for the next few minutes,
Daisy sawing away at the bread and Florence arranging treats on platters. The dining room table is set, the coffee ready to brew. This is her favorite part of getting ready for company. The hard work is done, and all that's needed now are the finishing touches. "Where is Mr. Ryman this morning?" Daisy asks as she begins spreading the egg salad on the sliced bread. "I hope he will not be pounding away in the attic during your meeting."
"Mr. Wyman is done pounding away," Florence informs her. "He finished the job yesterday, as a matter of fact. He has a meeting with a client today, and then he's bringing the bill first thing tomorrow morning. I suppose that's the last we'll see of him."
"Until the spring, you mean?" Daisy looks up from her work. "He said he would start building the greenhouse in the spring."
"If we do build a greenhouse, we'll have to find another builder." Florence does her best to sound nonchalant.
"As projects go, it's a bit beneath Mr. Wyman."
"You say this of a man who has spent the last 3 months building a simple porch and laying an attic floor."
"He did not behave as though this work was beneath him."
"Yes, but you see, he was supposed to be working on an actual house, only the owner of said house had to postpone the project," Florence explains, even though Daisy already knows this.
"Mr. Wyman had time to fill, and he loves to keep busy, so he worked here in the interim."
"You think he took on this work because he wanted to keep busy?"
Daisy shakes her head and laughs.
"I have never met a woman who knows less about men than you do."
Florence doesn't reply.
How is it possible that after all these years, Daisy can still make her feel like a child?
Perhaps it's because the old woman acts at times as though she's Florence's mother and refuses to see her as an adult, in spite of all the evidence to the contrary.
Daisy as a mother. It's a thought that at one time would have made Florence shudder.
Daisy and her late husband never had children, and over the years Florence had thought, quite meanly, she sees now, that perhaps it was for the best. But now she wonders if Daisy grieved over being childless, if she would have, in her crotchety and cantankerous way, been a good mother. Florence wonders, not for the first time, what kind of mother she herself would have made.
"Tell me, Daisy," she says finally, "do you think I should have married Arthur?"
Daisy lets out an unladylike and quite unmotherly snort.
"What a mistake that would have been! Yes, yes, Mr. Purefoy loved you, and I suppose you loved him. But do you think love is enough? No. You have to see the world in the same way. You have to live in the world the same way. Like you and Mr. Ryman. Every day, Mr. Ryman does work he loves. And you do, too. Do the work you love. You don't have to work, not for the money, anyway. And yet, work, work, work. It's all you do, because it makes you happy. And Mr. Ryman and the little boy make you happy, and you make them happy."
It is, perhaps, the longest speech Daisy has ever made, and Florence feels lightheaded in its wake.
"Perhaps I do make Mr. Wyman happy," she replies after a moment, "but only as a friend. Another woman owns his heart."
"Who is this woman?" Daisy asks, waving the egg salad spoon in the air.
"There is no other woman."
"Has he told you of this woman?"
Florence shakes her head.
"Not exactly, but she had dinner at his mother's house. She's Leo's teacher, you see, Miss Ashby."
Daisy lifts her spoon again and pushes Miss Ashby's name away.
"You are ridiculous, pretending you have no feelings about this man beyond friendship, thinking that he has no feelings for you. Why don't you see things more clearly? You can add up figures all day long, but you cannot see what is in front of your face. You think if this man had another woman, he'd eat dinner here every night? That he would bring you dinner? Of course not. And this is not to mention that no woman would put up with that.
100 retorts fly through Florence's mind, but she can't bring herself to utter a single one. All she can do is shrug and say, "If Finn had feelings for me, I think he would say so."
"He has said so," Daisy shakes her head. "He has said so with his actions every single day for 3 months. Too bad for him that you are so blind. Du bist lächerlich."
There's a knock on the front door, and Florence runs a hand through her hair, smooths her skirt.
"This has been fascinating, Daisy, truly, but I must greet my guests. Be a dear and put the sandwich tray on the table, would you?"
She goes to the door, her hands trembling slightly, and is glad to find Eula on the other side, a chocolate cake in hand.
"Now, I know you said not to bring anything, but it's Christmas, isn't it?"
Florence smiles at her friend, taking the cake so Eula can take off her coat.
"Never too much cake is my motto, especially this time of year. Oh, look, there's Bess coming up the walk, and she's carrying a plate as well. Why do I think we're going to spend all morning eating and none of us sewing a single stitch?"
10 minutes later, all the women of the Bee have gathered in the living room, including Eula's daughter-in-law, Elise, who has arrived with baby Jean in her arms.
"Even better than cake," Florence declares, taking the baby, "and I could eat her up just as easily."
"Better than cake, absolutely," Bess says, taking a plate and beginning her survey of the dining room table spread. "But better than pie? That's the question."
"A question you wouldn't be asking if little Will were here," Dorothy says.
"I adore my grandson, it's true," Bess agrees.
"And that reminds me, I have some news to share. Annie called on Monday to tell me to expect another grandchild in June. She's 3 months along and feels absolutely terrible."
"Good for her,"
Emmeline exclaims as she plucks an egg salad sandwich from the platter.
"The sicker you feel, the healthier the baby is."
The talk turns to pregnancy lore, and Florence laughs and smiles at the stories the other women tell of their own experiences and those of their friends and daughters, although she can't help feel a bit outside of their circle. She supposes that will be her lot in life, and that's fine. She has her business, and she has her family and friends. In a few minutes, when they repair to the living room, she'll reveal her newly quilted Shaker House quilt.
"That's enough, isn't it?"
"More than enough," Florence tells herself, and suddenly she realizes that she believes it. Chapter 9. Florence thought she'd go to her office after she'd cleaned up after the Bee, but here it is, nearly 1, and she thinks what she'd really like to do is take a nap. It's as though she's just come through something that's taken a good deal out of her, a bout of the flu or a long crying spell, and now she feels lighter, better, but still a bit shaky.
"No, no, this won't do," she decides. She's shutting down operations next week for the Christmas holiday, and she needs to go in and get her ducks in a row before the break. "Just one more thing she and Arthur argued about in the past," Florence thinks as she pushes herself up from the red chair.
"One day for Christmas was sufficient," Arthur had insisted. "But 3 paid days off? That wasn't sensible."
She's been wrapped up in the house quilt, and now she folds it carefully and places it on the chair. She'll have a cup of coffee, she decides, and then goes straight to the quilting company. Someone taps on the back door just as Florence enters the kitchen. Probably it's Daisy back from the grocery store, her arms too full to let herself in, Florence thinks as she goes to open it. She'd been sent off with a long list of ingredients for simple dinners Florence can make in a jiffy when she gets home from work in the evenings. She wonders how Finn will explain to Leo that they'll be eating dinner at their own house from now on. Leo's such a practical child, surely he'll see the sense in it.
If Finn isn't working at Florence's house, then why would they eat dinner there?
You're back sooner than I thought you would be, she says as she opens the door. I hope you found some tomato soup. I'm sure it tastes perfectly fine from a can, aren't you?
In my experience, it's not half bad.
Instead of Daisy standing on the porch, her arms full of groceries, Florence finds Finn, a white envelope in his hand. He smiles and tips his hat. Confused, Florence takes a step back.
I thought you were Daisy back from the grocer's. Come in, won't you?
Finn follows her into the house.
I know I said I'd come by in the morning, but something has come up. Something serious.
Florence turns to look at him. Is everything all right with Leo?
Yes and no, Finn says. He waves the envelope. Much to my surprise, he's written to Santa Claus. It seems as though all the other children in Miss Ashby's kindergarten class... No, I should correct myself. Mrs. Woodlawn's kindergarten class.
What happened to Miss Ashby?
Miss Ashby left for Cleveland on Monday morning, where she's to be married on Christmas Eve. Mrs. Woodlawn has taken her place for the rest of the year.
I didn't know they let married women teach, Florence says. She goes to the cupboard and pulls out two cups. I'm about to reheat some coffee from earlier, if you'd care to join me. There's cake, too.
Finn wanders over to the kitchen table, where Daisy has put the leftover cake and pie.
You and your quilting ladies don't hold back, do you?
We do like our pie, Florence agreed. So, Mrs. Woodlawn?
Is a widow, Finn finished for her. She's only there until Christmas, filling in.
Florence lights the stove to heat up the coffee left over from the bee.
I'm confused. I thought that you and Miss Ashby, well, I thought that, I don't know, that you had an attachment.
Finn looks at her as though he thinks she's daft.
An attachment to Miss Ashby? Because she gave Leo a bear?
And had Sunday dinner at your mother's, Florence reminds him.
As did you, Finn points out. As a way of easing their loss, Miss Ashby dined with each of her 14 pupils over a period of 2 weeks. They each got a toy or a stuffed animal as a goodbye gift.
He pauses.
You thought we had an attachment?
Florence shrugs.
Perhaps?
That's a pretty big leap to make, don't you think?
Another shrug. Possibly. But you did seem... awkward, I guess, when speaking about Miss Ashby on Monday night.
Finn shakes his head. I was feeling awkward about the Santa Claus question. I wish I knew how to handle those sorts of things better. Listen, how about I cut some cake and you pour us some coffee and we go sit in the living room? We never sit in the living room together.
A few minutes later, Florence is perched on her favorite red chair, and Finn sits across from her on the settee.
Did you make this cake? He asks, because this may be the best cake I've ever eaten.
Eula did. It's the cake that won a blue ribbon at the state fair.
Not this exact cake, of course. It's been a few months since the fair, Finn agrees.
And it's been several years since Eula won the ribbon, Florence tells him.
I'm sorry. Didn't you say something serious is the matter? I hope it wasn't an emergency, because we've wasted a lot of time with chit-chat if it is.
Thank you for reminding me, Finn says, and he puts down his coffee and cake and pulls the envelope out of his back pocket. As I was saying earlier, the children in Leo's class have all been writing letters to Santa Claus. And because I made Leo swear he wouldn't tell the other children his theory that Santa Claus doesn't actually exist, he was forced to write one as well.
Poor little fellow, Florence sympathizes. It's a terrible thing to have to compromise one's principles that way.
Indeed, but Leo is a good sport, and in the end he wrote quite a lengthy missive.
Oh dear, what sort of things does he want?
Finn leans forward. That's the thing. There's only one item on his list.
What could it be?
Florence asks, tilting her head.
A pony?
No, not a pony. That's not Leo's style. A zoo. Or let me think.
He wants your house.
Florence sets down her coffee in order not to spill it.
He wants my house? This house?
The very one, Finn shrugs. He says it's his favorite place in the world and he wants to live here forever.
Does he think Santa will put it in his stocking?
Finn gives her a look. You know, he's far more sensible than that. He thinks Santa will put the key in his stocking.
Ah, I see, Florence says. And then she slaps the arm of the chair as though she's found the flaw in Finn's argument. But Leo doesn't believe in Santa Claus, so he thinks no such thing.
Except that he's decided he does believe in Santa, Finn tells her, holding his hands up as if to say, I don't understand it either.
Florence and Finn stare at each other for a minute, as though they've reached an impasse in the conversation. Leo wants Florence's house for Christmas, and while Florence would give the boy almost anything, she's not prepared to give him her house.
I guess the question is, Florence says after a moment, if Santa Claus gives Leo my house, where am I to live?
Florence nods, as though Florence has asked a very reasonable question indeed, which, of course, she has.
The good news is that you don't have to go anywhere. Leo's plan is that all of us will live here together.
I explained to him that only families live in the same house together, so he added that to his letter.
He wants Santa Claus to make us a family?
That's what he wants, Finn affirms. I told him for that to happen, you and I would have to get married.
There's a very long pause, during which Florence examines her nails, her shoes, and finally the ceiling. At last she looks at Finn.
Is this a proposal? She asks finally. Because if it is, it's an awfully strange one.
Finn nods. I suppose it is.
You agree that it's a proposal or that it's strange?
A proposal, Finn affirms, and a very odd one indeed. I don't mean that it's odd we should marry, but we will have to work some things out. For instance, I suspect you don't want to move out of this house.
Nor does Leo, Florence reminds him, her heart racing.
Leo would also prefer to stay here, that's correct. Only it's your house.
Florence nods. She sees the problem. They will have to find a way to share the ownership of the house. It could take some time to work that out.
You know, Leo and I could stay in the house, she tells Finn, and you could build a 3-story treehouse out back.
Finn rises from the couch. I've always wanted to live in a 3-story treehouse, he says as he crosses over to Florence's side of the room. Of course, you and Leo will probably want to move in with me once I build it and you see how grand it is.
Daisy can live in the house, Florence says as Finn offers her his hand. She takes it and lets him pull her up from her chair.
She can build her greenhouse in the attic.
Finn nods, pulling Florence close. She's family, too. It wouldn't be home without her. Now, what do you say we go get our boy from school and tell him the good news?
Let's go get our boy,
Florence repeats softly to herself, and then she follows Finn out of her house, their home.
Thanks for joining us on the Quilt Fiction Story Guild podcast, a production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Until next time, this is Frances O'Rourke Dow. Thank you for joining us.